Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I hope everyone has had a good fortnight since the last episode. I hope you enjoyed Sally's podcast with me. I thoroughly enjoyed chatting to her, and hopefully we're going to have another one at some point and deep dive into a few of those subjects that we went around the edges of but never got too in depth with. So if you've got any questions about anything that came up, as always, do let me know. And Sally said she was more than happy to answer anything that came up. Make sure you do also go and check out Sally's membership that she was talking about at the end, because it's a fiver a month and you get loads of amazing moving and breathing classes and exercises to give you that little bit of motivation that she was talking about at the end of our podcast. Today's episode, though, is with Kay, and Kay is from Toronto. I met her on my teacher training over 8 years ago now, wherever the hell that 8 years has gone. And we get into loads. Kay is a climber, a yoga teacher, and in yoga, she's also does acro yoga as a side game, let's say, and also aerial yoga. It's her go-to thing. And she started working with a company, which you'll find out about in the episode. So if aerial yoga has been something you're interested in, then make sure you go and find out about the gear that she's designed and not built herself, but you can obviously do aerial in your own home now. So that's well worth a look at. Hope you enjoy this episode. As always, please do make sure you go and like, subscribe, follow, rate, and review, and all of that stuff, because it really does make a massive difference to the podcast being seen by more people and allowing me to get even bigger and better names than I already have, which is ridiculous because I've pretty much had most of the big and best names that I could ever want. But there we go. That's a side note. Have a great week slash 2 weeks, everyone, and I look forward to catching up soon, getting you guys let me know what you think. And yeah, we'll see you very soon. Have a good time. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode. Lovely to have you all here. Hopefully you've enjoyed the previous weeks. Today I am joined by a friend of mine who I met in India over 8 years ago now, 8 years and 3 months to be precise. Yeah, I know. It's crazy, isn't it? Kay is from Toronto, and I'm going to let Kay introduce herself and tell you a little bit about her, and then we can dive into just chatting, movement and breathing and living.
So hello everyone, my name is Kay Penyaflor and I have been teaching yoga. Actually, when Wivs and I met, I was there for my 300-hour teacher training. So I had actually already been teaching yoga for a couple of years prior to that. So I've actually been teaching for about 10 years. In recent years, I've started to specialize in aerial yoga, and that's yoga done in an aerial yoga hammock. So you're kind of suspended 3 feet off of the ground. You're able to kind of go deeper into your poses with a little bit more security. Even inversions, it's like one of the main benefits is spinal decompression, and this is what drew me to it.
Yeah.
I have scoliosis, like 10 degrees. Like back when I first started, I knew I had about 10 degrees of scoliosis. And then in recent, like probably actually I would say within the last 3 months, I discovered, like, my doctor told me that I have degenerative disc disease.
Right.
So I've shrunk. I'm like 2.5 inches shorter than I was when we met.
Oh, how wow. Can I answer
that? Yeah.
That's
I had
crazy.
No idea. Like, I did a sleep study earlier last year, and then the nurse was like, okay, so you're 164 centimeters. And I was like, pretty sure I'm 168. I'm like proud of myself. And then she's like, no, I'm reading 164. I'm like, are you sure? And I'm like trying to stand up taller. She's like, yeah, no, it's still 164. I'm like, ah, weird. She's like, but people shrink a little bit during the day. So this was at night when she took this. And then I was just like, yeah, but 2 inches, that feels like a lot.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, a lot.
She's like, you should look into that. So I was like, I went to a sports medicine doctor because I was having some hip problems. And then he's like, yeah, you have degenerative disc disorder. He's like, that explains why you've lost And then at that point, I had shrunk even more.
Wow.
I'm gonna be 4 feet when we see each other next.
That even lighter and more light for your acro yoga though, so which we'll get
Yeah,
into as well. Yeah,
the
exactly. So on the yoga front, let's dive into the yoga and we'll kind of come out from there because there's other bits and pieces in your, I mean, you've got a whole world of
wetter the
movement that we can go into, but
better.
having met through the yoga, we'll start there. How long prior to like your 200 hours? I mean, I kind of say I've been teaching for 8 years, but I've been practicing yoga for sort of 15 odd years. How far back does yours go, and what was it that originally brought you into wanting to, or into a yoga practice, I guess, because we all have our reasons, but.
So I actually just started the actual asana and like movement practice was started in 2006 when a friend of ours opened up the first hot yoga studio in
Oh, wow.
Toronto.
Okay.
And what was it called? It was Moksha Yoga back in the day. It's now
Okay.
called Moda, I think, or it's called something else now. But yeah, so him and his wife had opened up a studio, so a group of our friends would go to the hot yoga classes to support. And it was in the middle of winter, the first class. So when we came out, I was like, oh, that feels amazing, like to go from extreme hot to the
Yeah.
cold
Yeah.
side, like crispness in the air. That's the thing that kind of like hooked me, you know,
And
and
so
then
was that, sorry, was that back then? That was before Bikram had really come into disrepute too much, but like, was that a Bikram hot yoga, or was that just like a hot yoga?
It was just a regular, it wasn't Bikram.
Yeah.
It was just a regular, yeah, just the hot yoga.
Vinyasa, yeah.
Yeah, this kind of vinyasa. I feel like there were some things that weren't vinyasa, and like looking back, but I
Yeah,
also
yeah.
realized that there were a lot of like really new teachers anyway at that time. So everybody's kind of learning together. But then in terms of like the mindfulness and meditation aspect of things. Of yoga, I had attempted to start when I was 20, and I
Right.
went to this Buddhist temple. And I was like, I was going through some stuff, and I was like, oh God, I swear, I think I need to meditate or something. Like, I remember like seeing this Buddhist temple having meditation classes, and I went, and I was just kind of follow. I didn't know what to do, so I was kind of following what everybody was doing, like sitting and closing their eyes. And I could not stop myself from doing this, like
Falling
the
asleep.
head nod. And I was like, how do you do this? And then I kind of chalked it up to me, like not being ready.
Yeah.
So, but that
I
was,
would.
I remember that was my first like attempt.
I always find it an interesting one these days, and I've kind of mentioned it on the podcast a couple of times how meditation gets thrown around, especially in the medical world of like, oh, nowadays, oh, you need to go meditate. You need to go meditate, and they're, doctors are essentially prescribing. People who are not going to have a hope in hell of being able to meditate, and then they're going to go away and they're going to sit there and they're going to, I don't know, have their app or something that they're going to put on, and their brain is going to be going at a bazillion miles an hour, and they're going to be falling asleep and getting uncomfortable backs, and then they're going to go, this is bullshit, I can't do it, I'm not into it. And then you kind of miss that opportunity for someone to actually find a really good practice. But as we kind of know in Patanjali's sutras, meditation comes after, well, the yamas, the niyamas, the
There's a
asana and the
bit of work,
pranayama.
yeah.
Yeah. Like
No,
you can't just meditate. You need to actually
no.
put some groundwork in to be able to allow you to sit
Yeah,
for a prolonged period
right.
of time.
Oh, yeah. And I think that that's one of the reasons why I had kind of gone as deep as I did with yoga. Like when I got my training, I just remember my mind being blown in terms of like, it's just like, ah, oh, I wish, like, even in terms of like my own flexibility, like, I'm hypermobile. And prior to getting my teacher training certificate, I just remember going to classes and instructors not really paying attention to me and not realizing I was doing actually approaching a lot of the poses incorrectly. But because I was, you know, super flexible and like creating a shape
Yeah.
in a big group, it's hard to really notice somebody who, if they're in the shape already, if they're doing it right or wrong. And I say right or wrong in the sense that not necessarily that looking wrong, but like feeling wrong. Like you can't necessarily
Absolutely.
what someone's feeling, right? If you don't have a keen eye to it. And that wasn't until I got actually just even going through the course, I was paying more attention to my alignment and like where I'm engaging and what I'm not engaging. I'm like, oh my God, but it changed my practice. You know, and then at that point, I think after, I want to say after the 300 hour, and then I had come back to Toronto. I had kind of made this like goal to become a Lululemon ambassador. And when I got that wish, like I was able to like accomplish that. And I just remember taking one of my first classes with a senior instructor. And I was like, game changer. Like just like when you're with an instructor that knows how to cue from across the room and sees that, you know, if they add a little bit of like alignment here, and it was just
everything
verbal.
Follows up. Yeah.
That blew my mind, you know. So that also excited me about becoming a better instructor.
I do remember when we were in India and Magda was like helping you with, I think your back bends. Is it back bends? I know she helped me with my back
there.
Bends. Yeah, I was there. Yeah, I was in that class.
That point. Oh
Yeah,
my
yeah.
God. And I cried.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I have a feeling there was, because that I might be wrong. You know, it was 8 years ago, so I can't quite remember. But I have a feeling there was me and Kate were the only two who stayed on from my 200 hours to do an extra 100 hours the following month. And so you still had like 2 weeks left, I think, of your. So it kind of overlapped a little bit. And I think it was in that time. So I was practicing with the 300 hours for some of your classes. And I'm pretty positive it was in there because I remember the tears and I remember kind of hugs and all sorts afterwards. So,
oh my God, that was such a pivotal moment for me with finding strength within my flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I used to just like fold.
Yeah, yeah.
There was zero strength in it. I was able to go into all these really deep back bends and like, that's kind of some, that moment emotionally opened me up as well, because like it was the heart chakra that was really tight and closed. And like you could even, when you have these, I guess the best word to describe it would be hesitation.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
Doing something emotional within your movement practice, when you release those muscles and you're actually able to express that asana with ease and control, it was such an emotional experience. I remember coming up out of the drop back.
Yeah, that's right. It was the drop back, wasn't it? I do remember. I can remember that now.
And I remember Laura was right next to me, and she knew what my journey was with the dropbacks, because we were always just kind of positioned next to one another.
Yeah.
So as soon as I came up, I hear her cheer for me, and Magda was right there. I'm like, oh my God. It was so emotional.
And I think that's one of the problems with, because I've had this discussion with one of my other teachers, Joanne Averson. She was on the podcast, one of my first ever episodes, but she was similar, you know, back 20 odd years ago when she started yoga, and she was just super bendy, could fall into any position, and the teachers were just like, brilliant, you're super bendy, just do it more, just do it more. Do you know what I mean? And actually, you know, she pretty much, like all of us I guess, went on that journey and has discovered actually less is often more, and being able to find out how to engage, how to find strength in flexibility. And I'm, you know, I guess going into the business of yoga as it is these days, it's kind of so hard to, with so many teacher trainings churning out so many, I'm going to say, kind of underqualified teachers, that actually if you're someone who turns up to one of these classes and is hypermobile, or, you know, just extremely flexible, but have no strength in any of it, actually the chances are probably going to hurt yourself more than benefit from it.
Like in the long run, I think with when you are hypermobile, flopping into poses is actually, it doesn't hurt at all. Like it's actually
no.
pretty smoothie. I think it's like in the transitions where a lot of the discomfort can be found. Yeah, it becomes a mindless, you know. I think that just from my own experience, I haven't necessarily seen any dangers in it, unless an under not qualified, but like a novice instructor comes in to adjust something removal, and that could be kind of maybe painful.
I just think it'll be interesting to see. I think, as you say, kind of in the moment, potentially not dangerous as such, but I would wonder if later in life, how much kind of going into those like end of ranges kind of hypermobile spaces would then, 10, 15, 20 years down the line, whether or not that's be potentially where kind of, I don't know, some of those
Problems arise.
issues would arise.
Yeah, I would actually just, again, I'm speaking from experience. Like, I'm 44 now, and I would say within the last year, maybe a couple of years, I've just started to see the effects of not having strength at my end ranges. You know, like, I'm like a marionette. I was at a point with my shoulders, like I would be walking and my shoulder would just kind of pop out. Right. And then my yoga practice, my own personal yoga practice has completely changed. Like I strength train, I weight train. You know, my yoga practice is more of an applied yoga to life and has a mindful yogic approach
Philosophy.
to everything that I do. So like I know that well, you've seen that I've started like rock climbing, and through rock climbing, like both of my shoulders have dislocated. Like my one shoulder dislocated when I was doing a hand-to-hand, and then my other shoulder dislocated when I was climbing on, like, it was kind of like the hardest overhang route that I'd ever approached, and like I just understand what I was supposed to. Well, I did understand. I guess I was just tired and like overextended, and I had reached beyond my strength because I could, but then I put my body weight into it, and then like
Just
this bone here, you could see it in the video, goes up to my ear, and then I just remember having to like pop it back into place because I was in the middle of nowhere, and I'm like, if I wait for somebody to do this for me, it's not going to be done, and it's going to. So I just popped my own shoulder back into place, and then whatever, put my arm in a sling. But after all of that, I had having gone deeper into climbing, like my shoulders are the strongest they've ever been. My whole shoulder girdle. So I'm working all the ranges and everything, you know. So.
I wanted to bring that up really because I mean, I think I'm the same as you. I think many people, in all fairness, I think there's probably a big chunk of people who 8 odd years ago when we were out there probably are similar in a way of our yoga practice is actually more of just like a yogic, more of like a life, like not lifestyle, but you just try to live that way rather than it being the asana on the mat. My practice, I'll be honest, has been my whole movement practice this last like 2 months has been next to nothing. I've taken up running more than anything. But I actually found myself quite disconnected from an asana practice. And actually I far prefer, being outside, climbing trees, natural human movement stuff rather than weird contortionary like bits and pieces. And I can't remember who I was talking to yesterday. Oh, Sally Parks, another yoga teacher. But I haven't done a wheel pose for, I don't think I've done wheel for 2 or 3 years. I mean, I don't even miss it.
Yeah, like we don't use it, you know. Like I think that, like in the sense that the eight limbs of yoga can help you get to a place of mindfulness. I think that once you achieve that place of mindfulness, you can start to apply it to other aspects of your life. You know? So I definitely apply mindfulness to my climbing. It has to be there. Like if you're problem solving, you
I
know.
was going to say with climbing in particular, it's such a it's constantly solving puzzles.
you know, I mean, I haven't climbed huge amounts, and I did get quite into climbing for a little while, and then, you know, started teaching on a Saturday and stuff, and I would love to do it again at some point. But you can't not be 100% present when you're doing it, just because you've got to stand there and try to figure out roughly what you're doing, and then you've got to get on the rock. And you know, and most of the time, especially obviously, well, I don't do any, I've never done any climbing on ropes, but you know, if you're bouldering, then you're just going to fall to the floor if you're not fully attentive. So
Absolutely. And I think that one of the cool things about my approach to bouldering and climbing in general is the, like, while the sport itself, the I would probably, again, I'm kind of fairly new, and you know, I'm just speaking from what I've observed, but the goal generally of the sport is to get to the top. You know, for the, going from the bottom to the top, and like sending it, ideally flashing it or onsighting. And for somebody who is brand new to the sport, they could have this tunnel vision to just do that. So my approach with yoga, my yogic approach to climbing it, is there's the, like, the yamas and niyamas, like, so there's non-attachment. Like, I'm able to be like, okay, well, I'm not going to injure myself to do climb, you know.
And you've got
And I
your,
think
you've got HIMSA there as well.
yeah, exactly, the non-attachment. Yeah, exactly. So I think even my climbing practice has changed, like, ever since I did kind of discovered the degenerative disc disease. Coming down off the wall with my, if I'm, I am a bit of an adrenaline junkie, so I will throw myself at certain things. So, like, in the, what I had noticed is, like, when my skills started to level up, I started to approach boulder problems that were more challenging. And a lot of the time, it was like the last or second to last move to the top, and this is 20 feet up, would be something where I would feel nervous about. So I would just throw myself to the next hole because I had this kind of catch and, like, you know. But if I missed, I'm falling 20 feet, you know. So I think there was a couple where I had fallen pretty nastily, like, and like it, like, threw my hips off. I'm like, damn, like, I would feel it for a few days afterwards. And like, having spoken with a couple of other, like, more experienced climbers, they're like, yeah, like, the older you get, like, it just becomes a little bit more dicey, like, coming off the wall. And so, like, there's this kindness to ourselves that we have to adopt. So this is kind of why I've leaned more towards ropes, climbing top roping, because if I fall, I have a harness to, like, stop me from hitting the ground, you know.
That makes a lot of sense. And actually, yeah, as you say, is that kind of taking that kind of slightly ahimsic kind of idea of it. And really, it makes no difference, does it? Do you know what I mean? I guess if you're out bouldering in the wild, in sort of outdoors, then, you know, you're probably going to have less chance for ropes. But again, you can, I'm sure you can still go proper climbing out in, I'm sure, do you know what I mean? Canada's not England. You've actually got some decent outdoor spots to climb. Suffolk is a bit flat.
There are different, like, there are different areas within Ontario that you can climb outdoors. Like, I've been kind of looking at the way that I've approached climbing or how it's entered my life. I've been pretty lucky in the sense that I started outdoors, you
Okay, I
know.
was going to say, I was going to ask you how it came into your life and your movement practice, really.
So I think back in the 90s, I did, like, I started out indoor rock climbing, kind of recreationally. Like, it was never something I'm like, oh, I want to get learn more about this sport. It was with my family, or I would go with a bunch of friends, and it was maybe once every couple of years, if that. I think in 2006, I may have gone a couple of more times that year than normal, but still, it wasn't enough that got me excited about it. And then in 2020, I was on tour. I don't know if you saw this. I was, like, doing in, like, an acro
Yes, I
tour.
did. Yeah.
It was a small tour, like, throughout Asia, and so we would perform and teach at these festivals. And part of the tour was to stop off in Laos at this climbing hostel, because my acro partner was a climber, is a climber, and he's quite experienced. And he was like the one, he's like, okay, well, I'll teach you how to lead climb, da da da. I'm like, sick. I didn't know what that meant.
Okay.
I had my first attempt at climbing outdoors was actually in Kansai in Thailand. And I get to the top. I reach the top. I get to the anchor. And I was like, okay, I'm here. And he goes, okay, now turn around. And then I turned around and it was the most beautiful view. And I was like, how have I not been doing this my whole life? I'm such a nature person. I
Yeah,
love
me too.
Nature. I love like just absorbing everything that it has to offer. So like to just see this beautiful view. And I'm like, I was kind of disappointed in myself. Like this was at my fingertips for so long. I had no idea. And then from there,
yeah.
I kind of became more and more interested about learning how to climb effectively.
Yeah.
And then I got, I think March 2020, I was in Laos and the world shut down and I decided to stay because in my head, I was like, I'm sure this will blow over in a couple of years.
I think we all, yeah, 2 weeks, 2 weeks lockdown just to flatten
yeah,
the curve. Then we'll
like,
get back to
I was
normal.
Like, I'm like, they just need to sort shit out. I'm sure that it'll be fine. I don't know if I can swear. I just did. Sorry.
You can. Totally can. Totally can.
And yeah, my mom, I'm even like, I reached out to my mom. I'm like, I don't know, mom. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, I'm listening to the news and everybody's like saying that there's this like airborne disease and everybody's being asked to get on planes and go home. I'm like, aren't we spreading it? Like, it doesn't make sense. So I wanted to stay home in Laos. And my mom's like, well, what's it like? I'm like, and I showed her the views and she's like, how are you eating? Are you okay? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, it sounds healthier there. So stay.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh. So I was there for 5 months. Long, like,
oh, wow.
I was supposed to be there for three, or sorry, I was supposed to be there for a month. Ended up staying four more because the world actually shut down and I couldn't go home.
Yep. So, so what was that like out there then? Because obviously, I mean, certainly in England, we heard nothing really about any of these other smaller kind of Eastern countries, I guess. You know, we saw what was happening, I guess, in China. But was it crazy lockdown life in Laos, or were they fairly open and relaxed? And
so at the time when the first kind of announcement, you know, came out, we learned that there were confirmed 19 cases in Laos.
Right.
And then they shut the borders. We were locked down. So again, super fortunate. I was locked down on this property that was probably the size of, you know, my neighborhood.
Right.
Surrounded by mountains, but like that was the property, you know.
Yep.
So there were, at the end of it, it started with 300 to 400 people on the property.
Mm-hmm.
And then when everything shut down, 2 weeks later, there were 50 of us.
Oh, wow.
I decided to stay. And even over the course of 2 weeks, another 20 left. So at the end of the day, there were only 30 foreigners that stayed at this
yep.
hotel. Called Green Climbers Home. And at this place, there's over 200 routes. There's a bouldering area. So we were kind of in this, like, we were locked down, but
yep.
we were coming and like, just we weren't allowed to leave the property.
But also you were probably living outdoors, which is by far the healthiest and safest
it
place to
really
be.
Was. My first month there, I stayed in a tent. I moved into a dorm right when like it started to rain really hard.
When everyone left.
Yeah. I moved into a dorm and like the day that I moved into the dorm, we had a storm and the tent that I had filled with water by about a foot. Because
oh, wow.
I got all my stuff out first, like my laptop, everything. Like in the morning, they're like, oh, we'll help you move all your stuff to a dorm. In the afternoon, we went back. She's like, one of the girls, Melissa, she was just like, she's like one of the managers there. She goes, okay, oh my God, I went to your tent and check on it to take it down. And it was like a foot of water inside of your tent. I'm like, oh, it was just nuts. Anyway, so like a lot of that experience, like, and I think a lot of my life has been very fluid in the sense that I kind of follow the rhythm of what feels right.
Yeah.
And the climbing made sense. And it was through climbing that kind of helped me in my aerial yoga career, obviously.
Okay. I mean, that's where obviously, because with the aerial yoga, that's obviously one of the big things that, you know, you're doing these days. And you kind of obviously also have partnered up with, is it Geodynamic? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
You know, which I think looks so cool because, yeah, we'll go into that and then we'll come back to how quite how the climbing has aided and helped that. But like the geodynamic stuff that you've got for your aerial thing.
Yeah.
So in case anyone doesn't know, like with aerial yoga, trying to have a hammock at home is kind of tricky. I mean, most of the time you've got a big kind of tripod, almost like scaffold poles to hang
Yeah.
it in, and you need a lot of space, and it's a bit of a tricky one. Whereas obviously with this new thing that you've worked on and helped develop, you can do it in your own room.
You can literally do it in your doorway. And I think that when people hear this, and like particularly people from the aerial yoga, maybe even circus community, they hear it in the doorway. That sounds very dangerous. But the contraption itself was designed by two engineers who have kind of distributed the weight between these two clamps, essentially.
Yeah.
And the way that the clamps work, it's like front and back. I actually have it here. Hold on, let me just grab it.
Yeah, let's have a look.
So the way that it works is like when it clamps onto the door, above the door frame, there's like a spring here that it's spring loaded, so it closes in on the door. And this is kind of an elastomer, so it doesn't. Another thing is like you see those pull up bars. My
Yeah.
mom has one, and then like she had to take it down. She's like, it's screwing up the, like it's like scratching up the paint, and it's like messing with on the one side. It's like uneven weight distribution. Whereas with this, it's like even on both sides. Like even if I were to pull this weight in this direction, it's still the elastomer that's kind of, you know, pressing against the wall. So there's like zero scratches,
damage. Yeah.
Zero damage. So you're able, and the cool thing, what I love about this is like you can travel with it. Like when I went to Vegas for the holidays, I teach online classes, like yoga classes, and I was able to bring this with me and continue teaching my classes.
So with aerial, because obviously I follow them as well online, as well as you, obviously. But you see lots of people doing like chin up, you know, like rather than having pull up bars, they use those. So when you're doing aerial, do you just need to use one of those, or do you use hook up from two?
We use two. So it's set up with the two. It's like this is just the one of them, but there's two of them come up. And then this setting is switched out for the aerial yoga.
Right.
So the hammock, like this is removed completely, and then the aerial yoga hammock is substituted. And the reason why it's better to have a two anchor setup for this particular setup is because if it was a single, you wouldn't have a lot of space inside of the hammock itself to do
Yeah,
any
yeah,
work.
It makes sense. Yeah, yeah.
So opening up the top is super helpful in that sense.
So I know you've kind of briefly mentioned about like spinal decompression stuff, but with so there's going to be a bunch of people who have probably never heard of aerial yoga. So why do you like it so much, and what are the benefits that people can get from aerial yoga?
So if you've ever had fears of being upside down, or having the ability to get upside down and stay upside down to actually experience the benefits, aerial yoga is a safe way to be able to get into an inversion. And, you know, additionally, in the way that you're approaching this inversion, you're also achieving spinal decompression, which is something that we aren't able to do when we are in inversions on the earth. There's still that compression. So with the way that the hammock is set up on the body, you're getting traction at the hips. And from there, you can literally, if you can connect with your breath and you're guided by your instructor to really see the space that's being created from your tailbone all the way up to the top of your head, you can literally feel like energy spilling out the top of your head into the earth. Another one of the benefits with this practice is to be able to kind of, even for balancing poses upright, because you have a hammock, because you have support, you're kind of able to go deeper into, for example, dancer's pose without toppling over, you know. I would say also with a pigeon pose, which is a fan favorite for runners and anybody
who doesn't love a good pigeon?
Yeah. So the feedback that we get from the ground when we're in a pigeon pose, for example, you'll sometimes people will feel it in their knees or their ankle. And yeah. with that feedback, it almost inhibits you from actually experiencing the pose itself.
Yeah.
When, a pigeon pose inside of the hammock, you're able to approach it with your own alignment. So you're actually able to work on the pose yourself, you know, as opposed to like, you know, having to like also apply, you know, mindfulness and like, you know, non-attachment to the pain that you're feeling.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So I would say like, even for somebody who's extremely mobile, you can go into a pigeon pose deeper.
Yep.
So I go into like an over split.
Yeah. Yeah.
But because again, of the things that I've learned over the years, I'm able to kind of activate and engage within that hypermobility. So it's really, really, it's fascinating to me. And you can do all of those poses. Like, mind you, because you're in a doorway, you can do a lot of the lavish, like legs wide open, but the poses that are most beneficial and functional, you can attain.
Which is really what, you know, I don't know. Yeah. The older I get, the more I feel like the, you know, the more functional, whatever that word really means. But, you know, the less lavish, flashy ones tend to be the ones that you keep wanting to go back for, and the ones that really kind of do the most for you anyway. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, and it's funny that you're like, whatever functional means, but I think like anything that you can apply to your day-to-day, like the shapes in your day-to-day, or that you would need. I recently got certified with FRC, which is functional.
Okay. I hadn't realized you'd done that. That's kind of cool. I'd be interested because I know about it. I follow a few of the people, Beard, whatever his name is, Kin Stretch with Beard on Instagram. He's like, Amir, I think his name's Amir or something. But how have you found that then? Because I did it for a little while. I kind of signed up to his online thing and did about a month of it. Maybe you can just go into what that is. And because I know some people, I'm sure many people would benefit from that kind of, as you said earlier, kind of it's kind of strength at end range, really, isn't it? It's what you're kind of aiming for.
Mm-hmm. What's really cool about it is you can apply the tool from FRC to what you are, like the exercises that you're currently doing, and it's mm-hmm. more the approach to the exercises.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can kind of come back to the pigeon pose, one of a cool way that, and it's interesting because when I was going through the work for FRC, I was like, I do this already. Like a lot of how I teach. In terms of just because of the way that I've had to approach my own practice, it's like you teach what you are, you know, what you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so in a pigeon pose, just say, for example, the front leg, you know, rather than kind of just sitting in it, you actually apply pressure to the front leg, you know, and continue to apply pressure. So the way that I've been able to approach my mobility classes, or I now teach mobility for climbers.
Okay.
I've since, you know, adopted the FRC into what we do, and what's ended up happening is we're not, you know, blasting through all these different exercises. We're taking a pose like an asana and dissecting it and allowing everybody to really examine where they are within it. Apply, access their own mobility through the tool. Yeah. It's super fascinating. Like, it was really nice, actually. I had a class on Tuesday, and then post class, like, I've had a few people like just message me. They're like, "Hey, I hurt." Hey, that was nuts. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of what you want to do, you know?
Well, exactly. You actually want to, because I think in yoga, let's take yoga for example, it can be easy to do your yoga practice and then that never actually really. explore your end ranges, but like as we've kind of said throughout this, is like actually finding strength and whatever else. And if you, because I remember when I signed up, when I signed up and did the month of FRC with Beard, again, same with me, kind of all of a sudden there was stuff I was doing, you know, pushing, as you say, the classic pigeon of like actually engaging into that front leg, and it, same with the back leg to a certain degree and whatever else, but doing all of that stuff. And when you get people to do it, you can suddenly see their faces kind of go, oh, and like, it's just a totally new experience for them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super cool to see that. And like for people to be excited about their own, what the possibilities are within their own range. Like if you were to look at the class that I had somebody who was extremely hypermobile, like myself. And so I was able to identify with her quite easily. But then it also, I had a guy who was like a hockey player.
Like a stick.
Pretty tight, you know, but I could see them both working and both benefiting in the approach.
Yeah.
You know, so like oftentimes what can happen in a yoga practice when it's, when you have different levels, sometimes depending on the cueing, depending on the focus, some people who are stronger will probably benefit from a power class because they'll feel themselves engaging in the way that they should, whereas somebody who is perhaps not quite there will feel defeated because they're not feeling or, you know.
Yeah.
So I do like the inclusivity of an FRC.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. Yeah. Now, maybe, I don't know whether or not.
FRC the yoga, like yoga.
Yes. Poses. Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's literally, it's fantastic. I love it.
Maybe you can, because there's something which, I've never understood the I don't know whether you know the answer to this or not, but maybe you can enlighten me. They talk about irradiation a lot. It's a premise I don't really understand. So maybe from the purpose of like isolating, but again, this guy Beard, you know, he talks about it in different levels, and you know, you can be like 10% or like 100%. And from what I understand of it, it's kind of like it's essentially almost putting like a whole body tension throughout all the tissues whilst you then individually move one joint.
Yeah. So the way that I was able to kind of really identify with irradiation was actually your bandhas.
Okay.
So if you were to take irradiation and apply all three of your bandhas, you're essentially
okay. Oh, I get. Okay. So that makes some sense.
To another level too. You know what I mean? Like I would say like in terms of the throat lock, we're not doing this. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
It's just the approach to a bandha, like
in there's all, kind of like that lock of like locking energy in.
Whole body bandha is what irradiation would be.
Okay, that makes sense. Then.
A mula bandha, it actually heightens it because you're going internally. You know,
internally, and, yeah.
So that might be an interesting way to approach irradiation too. Like I that's what as we were going through the course, I'm like. It's so interesting how like a lot of like what is being taught is very similar or relative within the yoga structure.
It's just, it's almost that taken it from the, let's say, spiritual side and almost just kind of made it into the sports med almost side.
Which is a lot of what we're seeing today. Like I look at these different modalities in terms of movement, and a lot of their approach can be kind of like, you know, if you were to follow the lineage, you can see relation to Eastern philosophy.
Well, you know, I mean, from my perspective of what I, you know, where I am, you know, I spend my life kind of talking about breathing, and I just posted this week on the old Instagram about a guy who came into hospital having had chest pain, having been doing the Wim Hof thing, and you know, really where breathing's getting to now is taking a lot of the Eastern breath work, but have just backed it up with like the science side. And then you kind of potentially get, I don't know, depends how you look at it, either more caution or less, depending on who's doing it. Because, you know, traditionally we would know that hopefully, I mean, I know when I practiced with Upendra, I never felt unsafe. I never felt like out of my depth, because I always kind of had a fairly strong feeling that he knew exactly how much he was giving us, what was the right, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas, again, going back to the idea of yoga teachers being inexperienced, there's a lot of breathwork people who are very inexperienced, and you see these kind of potentially bad situations that can occur, because people just think, in the same way that people think, oh, you can't hurt yourself in yoga, oh, I can't hurt myself, I'm only breathing, and you're like, well, you definitely can do in both of those things.
Yeah, it's true. Like, to the, like, as, yeah, I agree, like, in terms of having a novice instructor, but like, I was a novice instructor at one point.
Oh, absolutely, me too.
I know that, like, it comes through experience, but like, think what's happening is, and I think everybody kind of does it, it's like you go to the class that is, or the schedule that works with your schedule, so absolutely. Whether it's who is experienced or not, that just works with your life, so just do it. I find that when people ask me for advice in terms of how to get started with yoga, like, a lot of the time I recommend that they find a studio that's close to their home. Find a time slot on the schedule that works with yours. Like, yep. Do everything that is in your favor. And if you don't like that class, it actually might be the teacher, which is not a bad thing. If you just might not relate to them, or their cueing might not, you know, land with you, or the style of the class might be not be something that you would enjoy. So then you can explore other instructors within the same studio, because you want to be able to do something that is part that you can add to your daily routine that isn't absolutely. Like, a bitch to kind of like, you're like, oh, I gotta go travel 2 hours out of the direction that I normally, you know. So if it's already on your a part of your routine, is easier to kind of get there, you know. So it's like path of least resistance, and then 100%. If you find resistance in the church, in the person that you're being instructed by, it's not the whole practice of yoga, because there's so much to, you know, to share. It might also even be like, hey, you can ask the front desk. It's like, I need XYZ. I'm looking for XYZ in my life. Can you recommend a class, or, you know, a style that might work for me? But if you go to a yoga class because it's the cool place to go to, and it doesn't resonate, you're going to hate it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're going to hate everything about it. If it's too hippy dippy, or like if you go to a Kundalini class.
And you've never done anything before.
And you've never done yoga before, and you're kind of, you know, hesitant about your approach, even Kundalini might not land at all.
I remember being in India, and bearing in mind I'd practiced Vinyasa and Yin and Ashtanga in Canada when I was out there at the studio there, and I loved Yin as a practice. Like, I was pretty into Ashtanga and Vinyasa, but then I remember walking down the beach on like the third day of my training, and there was, I think it was Bamboo or one of the studios down schools down that end of the beach a little bit, and there was two or three people outside doing Kundalini. I'd never seen a Kundalini practice before. I was like,
what's happening?
Those guys look mental. Like, do you know what I mean? They're literally like flapping and shaking and stuff, and I was a bit like, I do not know what that is, because at that point my practice was very much like a physical practice. You know, obviously Yin was pretty down regulating, but for the most part it was about me wanting to headstand, wanting to handstand, wanting to arm balance and whatever else. And actually that's probably the best thing I took away from my entire training in India, was I went out there with this plan of like, I'm going to be able to handstand and I'm going to be able to do this and that. And I can literally remember like the first and second time Upendra taught us, and I was like, oh, there's a lot more to this. And I'd literally, because I stayed for that second month, I planned to, in my head before I went there, it was like, oh, I'm going to have like 2 months of just hard asana practice. I'm going to be like all of the arm balances, all of the inversions. I'm going to, you know, pinch is going to be my bitch. It's going to be amazing. And then by the time I got to that fourth week and I finished my training, I was like, I don't want to do any asana again. Like, I don't want to do it. And I literally just want to spend a month with a Pendra. And I spent an entire month sitting on a rock at the end of Patnam Beach, you know, at 5 in the morning, just meditating for an hour and a half, 2 hours with him. And then sitting there reading the sutras at lunchtime. And it was incredible.
It's mind blowing. Yeah, I get it. I get it. And I think that everyone kind of absorbs the information and takes it all in differently. Like, what's interesting about that time in India for me is that that was the most balanced I had ever been. Like, I don't know if you ever went to go see an Ayurvedic doctor while you were there.
Well, I did. And actually, so I went and got checked over by two. One when I was down in Varkala, down in Kerala. And then there was not that he was an Ayurvedic doctor, but there was a dude who lived pretty much I think he just lived on the street, like in Patnam, but he was like the Ayurvedic guy. And so a couple of the other girls and stuff had gone to see him, and I went with him. And he just said I was like perfectly in balance with my three doshas, that's the right word, isn't it? Yeah. And then when I went to this one in Varkala, I mean, it was this ridiculously pimping retreat resort place. And he, you know, he had like a outlandishly expensive watch on, and clearly he was just good at like taking people's money. But he was just like, oh, you're perfectly in balance, which I think is ridiculous because I'm definitely pretty Vata. Do you know what I mean? I'm a bit up in the air and whatever else, but they reckon I was balanced.
When I went, I was under the impression that I was Vata. I was like, I felt really, just everything about me seems Vata, right? And it was Laura and I, we went into this little area. I guess it was like a stall. There was like that one street close to Patnam Beach.
Yeah.
And so we go in and he's like, who wants to go first? And I don't remember who went first, but I sat down and he looked at me and he goes, and he did the check of the tongue and the like pulse. And he's like, oh, you're Pitta. And I was like, pretty sure I'm Vata. And he's like, you're very Pitta. As he's like, he would say, he was like more Pitta, and then Vata came next and then Kapha after. And I was like,
yeah.
Huh. And that was probably the last time that I was very much standing in my power in that way, you know, which was kind of cool. Like knowing that I was Pitta coming out of all of that, I was like, I felt really empowered hearing this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pitta. I have a lot of reverence for those who have Pitta as their main dosha because of the leadership skills and like their fiery attitude towards life and all of that stuff, right?
So let's just very quickly on that, as you've just gone into a little bit there, but there'll be some people who are like, what the fuck are you talking about? So
what are these hippies talking about?
They're talking some foreign language.
Sorry.
So what are doshas? Let's go into that briefly. And Vata, Pitta and Kapha, let's just as a very sort of 3 minute overview of what they might mean.
Okay, so when we are born, it is said in Ayurvedic medicine that we are all born balanced. So like the Pitta, Kapha, Vata. These are similar, if we're thinking about Western medicine, to the ectomorph, mesomorph. What's the other one?
Ecto, meso, and...
Oh. Endomorph.
Endomorph, yeah. Ecto, endo, meso, yeah.
Yeah, so if you're familiar with those terms, so for example, Kapha is somebody who has the likelihood, when they're balanced, they have the greatest aptitude for gaining the most muscle, the biggest muscles. They can be the strongest of the three.
Oh,
whereas if they're imbalanced, they can be sluggish, lethargic, and lazy. Somebody who is a Pitta balanced, they are somebody who has great leadership skills, very athletic. When they're imbalanced, they have a sharp tongue, they're kind of apple. With Vata, when they're imbalanced, they are, what is the positive thing about Vata? Sorry. They're slight, they are, they're jovial. When they are imbalanced, they're like flaky and airheaded.
Yeah.
You know? So there's, and like when we look at all three of those and we are each of us have a little bit of all of that within us. Like if you don't eat enough, then you can kind of be a dick. But you know what I mean? Things like that. When we are balanced within all three of those, there's this equanimity in the way that we approach everything. So there's the balance in the three doshas.
Yeah.
That a nice.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool. And it's like, it's freakishly accurate, which is the crazy thing. Because again, I went to India with, you know, I was very much a science brain type person. And before I went, my dad's cousin, I don't know what relationship that makes him to me, but he's half Indian and spends a lot of his time in India. He lived out there for many, many years as a chef. And he just said, when you go out there, just go out with an open mind. That's the only thing I suggest. Just take anything as possible. And so I was like, all right, well, I'll do that. But in the back of my head, I've always got this slightly, rational, logical, science-y type thing going on in the back. And, you know, I went and started looking into all these bits and pieces, and it's like, oh yeah, no, actually, this is horribly, horribly accurate to actually what's going on.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the cool things too, with the things that you learn within the yoga practice. And I think that's a lot of the reason why, like, I haven't necessarily abandoned yoga completely. Like, as you know, I started with the business K-Yoga, and then I transitioned to Ashtarial, which is the more aerial yoga focus. And like, in terms of me teaching yoga and my approach to things, like, it's literally like the way that I'm seeing yoga in my life, it's like applied yoga. Like, how can I apply it to my everyday?
I think that's exactly the same as we've kind of said that earlier, but that's exactly the same for me. Like, I still teach two classes a week in person, but one of them is like a chair yoga, you know, older people, kind of really gentle, mostly. And again, I wouldn't necessarily say FRC, but like some of the principles of, like, you know, just my work through anatomy and motion, you know, understanding human movement and stuff, but with the mindful attention of a yogic practice and the breath. And really, that's what I try to bring throughout, whether it be a class, whether it be just my life, is more just how can all that stuff I learn be just a day-to-day thing, which is really, to me, like the, you know, it's kind of hopefully nailing those yamas and niyamas to a certain degree, because those kind of 10 commandments, if you have them down, then really everything else does just kind of, with a bit, once you've practiced the movement and the breathing, and you kind of have, as you sort of said earlier, but you have like that mindful attentiveness of how am I breathing while I'm trying to do this, or how am I moving in this practice. Once you've got that, then really it's the 10 commandments at the beginning, which are the big ones, which then allow for the meditation just to and that mindful headspace to actually be useful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Right. Well, I can't believe we're pretty much, we've got like 7 minutes left. So we best wrap up with the, I've still got other bits I wanted to ask you, but we can maybe do another one at some point. And I was going to ask you about your dance with your, with your Filipino ladies and whatever else, but we'll bring those back for another time. And also we can, next time we'll talk about your dragon as well. That was off air. We were discussing your little dragon. So as I mentioned earlier, the podcast is called Move Breathe Live. I actually feel like you've given some pretty solid ideas throughout the whole podcast anyway, but if someone's listening to this and they want to take, if they were to take something away that they could maybe try to put into their day-to-day life to help them move, breathe, and live hopefully a happier, healthier life, what can you offer them? What little tidbit could you say as a little takeaway, apart from to obviously go and follow you on Instagram and buy your aerial yoga hammock slings?
I think that in this day and age, when we are just bombarded with so much information, so much to our avail, I think that when you set a goal for yourself, don't be so hard on yourself. You don't necessarily attain it in the timeline you've created. Give yourself space and time to get there, but don't stop trying to get there. if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does.
It can feel really, you know, frustrating if you set a goal and you're not necessarily like, just say at the end of this week, I'm going to do X, Y, Z, and you're from a physical like fitness standpoint, and maybe you get to half of that. It's okay. You're a little half closer than you were.
Yeah.
That just, again, just approaching your own personal development with kindness. There's already like, there's only so much shit out there where it's like kind of making us feel bad if we're not, you know, achieving or
smashing
or selling or like whatever the buzzwords are for achieving excellence. Know that you already are excellent and just keep going forward.
Hear that? You already are excellent. Kate told you. You can see Doug just settling down there. Look. Doug's just come in, a big monster. He wants to go out, I reckon. Well, Kate, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you for the last hour. And it kind of went in some pretty cool directions, which I hadn't got written down, which is amazing because I love it when that happens. That's why I try to keep it free and open and just see where it takes us, because it was nice to get into some of the doshas and that side of things, which I haven't really discussed on here before. So yeah, it was wicked. Well, where can people find you then? You did mention it, but just let us know where, and I'll put them all in the show notes. But if you just finally let us know where people can find you, and then I'll make sure anyone who wants to find you can come and find you.
I'm currently more focused on Instagram at the moment. For the Aerial Yoga Focus platform, it's at Ashterial. And if you wanted to follow me and my climbing endeavors and all the other fun stuff that I like to participate in, Kay Penaflor.
Cool.
At Kay Penaflor, super simple. I do have a YouTube channel, but I haven't given that a whole lot of love. Perhaps this year you'll see me a little bit more on the YouTube, but
I'm the same. I mean apart from putting these videos up, I've kind of not, I don't know
there's so much to do. Like when you're an individual, like as a, somebody who's self-employed, you're all of the hats, and I'm trying to like, again, approach everything with kindness to myself and not be so hard on myself if I'm not doing the things. So
that's what I'm trying to do too.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah,
amazing. Well, thank you so much. We'll end this now and I'll say goodbye off air, but thank you so much again for coming and joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's my pleasure as well. Thank you, Wims.
My pleasure.